D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, Sportsnet, NHL Insider, Elliot Freeman, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, don't think we didn't hear you wonder aloud on your podcast about whether Jonathan Marchessault and the Toronto Maple Leafs could be a match this offseason. And I know you were spitballing. But you spitballing is different than me spitballing. So how realistic do you think that actually is?
Yeah, Adam, honestly, that was a pure spitball. I make it very clear.
You did, yes.
Yes. You know, I just, you start to sit and you start to think about things that may match. And I wanted to make it very clear that ultimately it's the player's choice, because Marchessault has the power. And I've not asked him, and I've got no idea if he would even want to do that. He may not have any desire at all to do that. But you're sitting there and you're looking at fits, and, you know, I don't need to tell you, it was a tough season, Nashville. Pieces didn't all fit. There were some hard feelings. The Predators would like to make some changes. I'm a big Marchessault fan, last year notwithstanding. I think he's the kind of player that can really help a good team. I was just playing, like, I was like your grandmother, Adam. I was playing matchmaker.
fair enough. My grandmother did not set me up with my wife, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I use this thing called the phone, which is how people meet.
Yeah, that's right.
We are all awaiting the fallout, as I know you are, of the Toronto Maple Leafs elimination from the Stanley Cup playoffs in a tough Game 7 loss to the Florida Panthers. You reported yesterday that Brendan Shanahan has been granted permission by the Maple Leafs, despite the fact that his contract is expiring in only a month or so. He's been granted permission to talk to the New York Islanders about an opening in their front office. What sort of ripple effect will Shanahan's seemingly inevitable departure have inside the Maple Leafs organization?
I think that's to be determined, Adam. The Maple Leafs are owned, at least for now, by three parties. There's two telecom companies. There's Rogers, who I work for, owns 37.5%. Bell, who is the other telecom, owns 37.5%. And a gentleman by the name of Larry Tenenbaum owns the other 25%. Now, Rogers is in the process of buying out Bell. It may be done, if not today, soon. So they'll own 75%, and they're going to have control. But the board is meeting today, and they hired a new president and CEO, a guy by the name of Keith Pelley, who used to be a TV executive, and he took over a year ago. But he kind of sat back and waited and didn't make any immediate change. He wanted to feel his way around. There were some contracts that still had to expire. But it's believed that today he's going to make his plan to the board. And, you know, that could lead to changes both on the Maple Leaf side and the Raptors side. So we're waiting to hear the news. You know, the fact that they gave the Islanders permission to talk to Shanahan, as you said, Adam, leads to indicate that his footing is not exactly solid. But we don't know if it's going to go down any deeper than that. One of the things I do believe, though, is that the Maple Leafs have a very big staff. For example, they have five assistant general managers. So one of the things we've talked about and heard is that they're going to streamline their operation. So I think while we've heard a lot of these rumors, we're still waiting to see what that's going to mean. Sometime after this meeting, we should have a better idea.
The Edmonton Oilers suffered a tough loss last night, 6-3 to the Dallas Stars. The Dallas power play was en fuego at the start of the third period as they rallied from an early deficit. There is a player on the Edmonton Oilers whose upcoming contract negotiations I am absolutely fascinated by, and that's Evan Bouchard. Evan Bouchard has been fabulous in his postseason career. The stat is out there that only Bobby Orr has averaged more points per game in the playoffs among defensemen in NHL history, if I recall that correctly. And even without Matthias Ekholm by his side throughout the postseason, Bouchard continues to be excellent on the back end for the Oilers. What do you think that negotiation is going to look like? What kind of contract could Bouchard end up with this summer?
It's going to be a big one because the numbers dictate it. You know, Bouchard is arbitration eligible if he doesn't sign an extension, Adam. And arbitration is all about the numbers, the figures. And that says it's going to be a big number because he puts up points. You know, I'll say this. Bouchard is a really talented guy. It just seems like every mistake he makes ends up all over the highlights because they turn into like a big play against. And, you know, that's the thing about him is that he's polarizing. He's really talented. He can play with good players, which is not a small thing. But, you know, the mistakes he makes tend to be glaring. And I think it's actually going to be one of the more interesting cases is what is his next contract going to be, because the numbers dictate it's going to be massive. And we're all wondering, how do the Oilers feel about that? Connor McDavid, he's eligible to sign an extension on July 1st. He's got one more year left on his current contract, and he is worth a bazillion dollars. I think we're all curious to see, what is that number going to be? And sooner or later, you can't sign everyone. And I think people wonder exactly what that's going to mean for Bouchard.
Elliot Friedman is with us. So, yeah, I know we're going to, you know, let's not put the cart ahead of the horse. But how much groundwork do you think the Oilers have made knowing that this has been coming for a long time with McDavid? Now that they have the certainty, they've watched what the Avalanche chose not to do and move on from Rantanen, I guess for the reason of they didn't want too many guys. And I saw a stat the other day, Elliot, that really shocked me, that no team has ever had a player making more than $10 million win the Cup. Bobrovsky makes exactly 10. And I didn't cross-check that to verify that that's true, but I think
it's,
I know.
True.
Okay, and so with Oilers knowing all this, or do you think they're making progress? What do you think they have in mind for McDavid?
Whatever he wants.
Yeah. And as they should, you know, right? But at the same time, they're seeing that stat and they know how close they've come.
Here's the thing about that stat, though. Like, that stat is true, but now $10 million is much less a percentage of the cap as it used to be, right?
Totally.
So, while the number's true, I think it's a little bit different. And don't forget, last year, McDavid came within one win of the Cup, right? So, you know, he's right there. Like, they're right there. I think this. I'll tell you a story. So, last time Connor McDavid had his contract come up, which was 7 years ago, him and his agents walked in there and they said, look, like, the maximum you can make in the NHL is 20% of the cap. So, right now the cap is 87.5. So, the most you can make is 87.5 times 2, which is $17.5 million. Back then it was a smaller number, but they went in there and they said, look, we're not going to ask for 20%. And the Oilers were like, thank God, because we would have given it to you. And they initially, the agreement was 8 years at $13.33 million. And that kind of got out, and McDavid was like, nah. He just said, you know what, it's too much. I could give more to the other players in the cap, make a better team, so settle at 12.5. Now, I think there's going to be, I don't even know if it's pressure, but I think there's going to be an understanding that McDavid has to move the line. The number one guy right now is his teammate Draisaitl, 14, but I don't think he's going to take the max number. The interesting thing about a guy like Bouchard is, so the president of the Oilers, Jeff Jackson, he left being an agent to take over the presidency of the Oilers. His firm represented Bouchard. So that adds another layer to all of this. I think they recognize that Bouchard is young. He's a scorer. He's an important player to that team. But I think there's a limit. And I'm really curious to see where they're going to decide that limit is.
Every year, one of the compelling things about watching the Oilers is to see if they can win it with the superstars making what they make and with a, as the kids would call it, a mid goalie, right? And because we argue about it here all the time about how much you should pay a really good goalie. You've been in on the conversations with Saros, and everybody's stressed that Saros had a down year and now he's going to be paid more, even though in the big picture, as you just got talking about, the cap's up, so the percentage he's going to make isn't really that high. But that aside, how much did a loss like that just sting, where they sort of had control of the game? I don't know how much you would put on Skinner in that game, but it's always like they're trying to carry the goalies around or really hope that the goalies overachieve.
Yeah, that one would sting. Like, if they lose that series, they're going to remember game one all summer. There's no question about that. When you're up 3-1 in the third period, especially the way they've played, you would think they would have knocked that one down. There's a couple of other concerns. Dallas was getting no scoring from anyone other than their first line. You know, their first line is Hintz, your buddy Granlund, and Rantanen. And when those guys were off the ice, they were getting caved in. And now Duchesne scores, breaks his slump. Sagan scores twice, breaks his slump. All of a sudden, these guys are feeling really good about themselves again, right? So you don't like that. That's not good. Secondly, you know, the thing about Skinner is he's really hit or really miss. Like, he just is. Like, either he shuts you out, as he did to Vegas twice in a row, or Bizarro World happens. And it's not really a great way to live if you're a team. It's too erratic. But I think now you kind of understand that as long as he's your goalie, you're going to have to live with some of that. And you're right. Last night wasn't all on him. Last year in their series, the Western Conference Final, I think Edmonton was either perfect on the penalty kill or they only gave up one. They gave up three in game one. It's just a bad sign for all of that. And I still think Edmonton, they've got a good mentality. They'll roll their eyes and they'll put it behind them as long as they're playing. But if they lose that series, they'll regret that one all summer. All summer.
And now to the Saros part. I'm curious, and I know you're not watching the World Championships very closely, and to be honest, I'm not watching all of the games myself, but I have noticed that so far, UC Saros has played tremendously for Team Finland, and I'm looking for positive signs that he could sort of rebuild after a really tough year mentally, I'm sure, for him. What have you seen over the years of what a good World Championship performance can do for a player's mentality and confidence?
Well, I would look at Anaheim's young goalie, Dostal. So last year, the media tour in Europe was in Prague, and it was just after the Czechs had won. And that Dostal, who's the goalie in Anaheim, he was their starter. And all the NHL guys were raving about him, like just raving about him. Even the other goalies, guys like Peter Mrazek and Vemelka from Utah, who didn't get to play because he was playing so well, they were raving about him. And he took another step this year. He had a pretty good year. And one of the reasons Anaheim believes that it can win eventually is because of what this kid did at the World Championships. So I do believe in it. I know there's a lot of teams out there that really want their guys to go play in that tournament if they've had a rough year, because there's something about playing for your country that snaps you back to attention, that gets you focused, that makes you feel something important. And, you know, we'll see how the medal round goes, but he beat Canada. That's never bad. Everybody always wants to beat Canada. So, you know, it's not a bad thing for Saros at all, as long as it ends positively.
Yeah, and you made the important point. The medal round hasn't happened yet. We'll see if it can continue. But the win over Canada definitely got some people's attention over here. So, Elliot, let's hit on the East. The Panthers, they seem to be really grooved in this, hitting on all of the notes that they are kind of the bullies that initiate, know not to retaliate, and really fluster the opposition. And, of course, they've got enough skill and talent to be better as well. They look like they are the complete package right now.
Oh, they are. They are. And, you know, the Maple Leafs pushed them to the limit, but when it really mattered, they manhandled them. And, you know, Carolina looked as good as anybody in the playoffs, and in game one, they manhandled them. You know, I thought Marchand said it best in game seven. Like, we know what to do. He wasn't there last year when they won, but he's an experienced player, and he joins a team. They all understand what their roles are. Paul Maurice makes all of them feel important. Everybody here is important. And whether you play 25 minutes a night or you play 9 minutes a night, your role is important, and everybody understands the way they've got to play. Toronto, like I said, Toronto pushed them right to the limit, but they never panicked. Toronto probably should have won that series, but they didn't, because these guys know how to play. So I just look at it that way. They don't beat themselves. They really don't beat themselves, so you got to find a way to beat them.
I wonder in 20 years, this is a question for another show, and maybe more of a question for Toronto, if they can be rational about it, which I'm sure it's hard to do right now. But,
which we can.
Right, yes. But the Panthers someday might be considered a great, great team that we look back on, especially if they win it again this year. Tampa, we know, was one of the greatest teams of the last, definitely of the salary cap era, but you could argue of the last 30 or 40 years. And that's who Toronto has had to get through in the first couple of rounds. And so putting that in perspective makes you maybe think differently, at least from afar, and not this failure of a franchise. At least it makes it understandable a little bit more, but that's if you're more rational and the 40,000-foot view, probably.
I think about that all the time, Willie. I really do. I always think about that. Like, you know, for example, Colorado lost round one. Does that mean Colorado's a failure? They would probably say yes, because they lost in the first round. But I always look at, because of the different playoff setup we have, I always look at who do you lose to as opposed to when you lose. Now, Toronto's disappointed because they haven't had a second-round win in 23 years, and they should have won. Like, they probably should have beaten those guys. But I do look at it like it's Florida, and you have to understand that it is Florida. But that doesn't – here, it doesn't erase the disappointment. And also, part of the issue, Willie, is that its contracts are up, right?
Sure.
So sometimes you get to make the decisions. It's like life. And sometimes the decisions get made for you. And this might be a case in Toronto where the decisions are made for you.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Elliot Freeman joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Stanley Cup playoffs. But coming up next, we reveal our nominee for World's Biggest Dirtbag. We'll do that coming up next. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.